What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, radio show host, and I have another show, including the one you're listening to, which is on every Sunday at 4 p.m. on this network. It's called The Women's Healing Circle, and that's a call-in show. So anytime you have some questions regarding your health, that's the show to call. And as always, it's great having you join us today for another exploration and in-depth conversation into subjects that women must know. If this is the first time you've been listening to the show, I want to just tell you about a few things. The shows on this network are now able to be podcasted, which means if you sign up for a podcast, every show automatically goes to your iTunes or wherever. And that means that even though you may not be here in person to listen to the shows, they will be ready for your listening convenience. And, of course, these shows are all archived, so you can always just tune in and listen to whatever the latest show may be. And one of the easiest ways to get to all of my archive shows is to go to my website, which just so happens to be called What Women Must Know. And if you find your way onto What Women Must Know, you can opt in. A little window will pop up. You put your name and email address, and then you'll get all my free special reports on a variety of topics relating to women's health, holistic solutions for many of women's greatest health challenges. And then on that homepage, you'll also be able to just find the link and go right to any of the archive shows. So it's a great place to go. By the way, I have lots of free articles and teleseminars, and that's really what I am all about, is providing women with truthful information so they can be truly empowered to make the most informed decisions regarding their own health. So I think that's, just the reminder to make sure you get on board, opt in, and listen to many of these shows as you can. I have fantastic guests who are the leading authors, researchers, clinicians in their field of integrative and holistic medicine. And that is why we're having another great show today with another leader in the field, particularly in regards to gluten sensitivity, one of my favorite topics, as you probably know if you've been listening. So today we're going to be exploring what is going on with this thing called gluten sensitivity and why the statistics are just becoming really shocking. And in fact, here they are. 1 in every 100 people has celiac disease. We're going to tell you what that is. 1 in 3 has gluten intolerance. And there's a high probability that you or someone in your family is, in fact, gluten intolerant, and why you need to pay attention to this show, because it can truly heal your ills, if not save your life. So to help us understand what's going on is my guest today, who is Dr. Edie Bauer. She is a chiropractor and applied kinesiologist specializing in clinical nutrition. Dr. Bauer had a many-year battle with a variety of health issues until she was finally correctly diagnosed with celiac disease in 2004. She has reclaimed her health, that's the good news, and her life by going on a gluten-free diet. Dr. Bauer has become dedicated to helping others get well by identifying and supporting patients with symptoms and health disturbances that are caused by gluten intolerance. Her recently published book is Life After Bread, Get Off Gluten and Reclaim Your Health. And she feels that women in particular need to hear this message. So it's with great pleasure that I welcome Dr. Bauer to the show. Hello there.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Well, this is a topic that I actually talk about a lot. I've had several people discuss it. I think we can never talk about it enough because it's something that just doesn't really dawn on people until somehow they discover that what's going on with their health is directly related to the eating of gluten foods. So, you know, I think we do need to be telling the message. And you have a really, well, I don't, you know, I'm not sure how to describe it. It's, you know, it's a, kind of want to say a fascinating journey, but it's also a harrowing journey. It was a painful journey. I mean, in reading your book, Edie, I just felt so, so sad for all those years that you suffered so long and no one could figure it out. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your own personal journey that led you to discovering what was really going on and now has become a passion of yours, and you're helping so many other people wake up to this issue.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share. I began my life in New York, where I was a daughter of a single mother, so I ate carbohydrates pretty much three meals a day. My mom worked, so I ate bagels for breakfast and pasta for lunch and pizza for dinner, and really never had whole food. Everything was made from flour and wheat. And so early on, I started to develop anemia and irritable bowel syndrome and symptoms like fatigue, menstrual irregularities, depression. They blamed it a lot on hormones. I saw doctor after doctor from the time I was 10 or 12 until I got out of high school, and then I just assumed that that was my body, and I had to just live with it. And I even saw a psychiatrist that told me it was in my head, because other than being a little anemic and having, you know, some, you know, measurable findings on lab, I didn't really have a disease, but I felt like I had a disease. I was pretty sure I had a disease. And that kind of was the impetus that drove me to chiropractic college and to study nutrition and kinesiology and muscle testing. And most of my life I was a carbohydrate addict. I mean, being busy, it's quicker to eat a sandwich or a slice of pizza or a bagel or a bowl of cereal than to cook a meal. And as much as I was studying nutrition, celiac disease was this small, they were teaching that it affected like 1 in 2,500 people, and it was this very rare condition, when the truth now is they're finding 1 out of every 100 people has it, and celiac disease is actually an autoimmune reaction to wheat. And gluten. So wheat is wheat, rye, and barley. And I was eating those on a daily basis, as do most Americans. Some of the symptoms that I was experiencing, I wasn't associating with any kind of food, because when you're depressed or when you're having joint pain, you don't think of food. You think stomach pain food, or stomach pain would lead to, or digestive problems would be from maybe a food allergy. The thing about celiac disease or gluten intolerance is it's an autoimmune reaction, which is a delayed reaction. It's not an allergy. They're two totally different reactions in the immune system. So it took me many years before I found the right doctor, you know, going through MRIs because they thought maybe I had a brain tumor. I started losing weight by the time I hit 30. I had three miscarriages and then went through a very difficult divorce and into a spiraling depression, and then just continue to wake up and eat a piece of toast for breakfast, and everything I ate hurt my stomach because most of the things I ate contained gluten. And when the right doctor, a naturopath, actually finally diagnosed the celiac disease, I couldn't believe that all those symptoms could be related to this simple, you know, I mean, avoid wheat, first of all, it seemed too simple, and then on the other hand, it seemed monumental to give up everything that you enjoyed eating. And but it was the biggest shift ever. It changed not only my physical but my mental state. My energy was, I'd never had energy like I do now when I'm, you know, now that I've been gluten-free for 6 years. And joint pain went away, depression went away, stomach problems cleared up, everything. You know, I had my bloated belly went flat for the first time. We've had that kind of, you know, ongoing bloat or, you know, indigestion. And when I took the gluten out of my diet, everything went away. So it fascinated me, and it also infuriated me that it took so long for none of these other doctors had acknowledged or identified this condition after seeing, I don't know how many, but too many medical doctors and practitioners. So I became obsessed and intrigued with learning everything I could about celiac disease. And the truth is that celiac is just one of the diseases that happen when you're sensitive to gluten. You can have an autoimmune reaction to gluten, and it can attack any other organ in your body. So you can develop autoimmune disease to the thyroid, autoimmune disease to the pancreas. They're now finding that both diabetes and celiac disease are associated with the same genetic marker, which is called HLA-DQ2 and 8. And if you have that genetic marker, you can develop either celiac disease or diabetes, or maybe they are one and the same. Once you develop an autoimmune reaction to gluten, it destroys the pancreas as much as it's destroying the intestinal villi. Celiac disease, by definition, is an autoimmune attack to the villi in the intestines, causing damage to the absorption of the intestines, so you don't absorb your nutrients. And when you can't properly absorb food, you get malnourished, which can lead to a variety of symptoms. And that's what I was experiencing.
And that's why you were losing weight, because actually you were malnourished.
Malnourished, and if you don't have the right nutrients, you can't build neurotransmitters to be happy, so you can get depressed. Yeah. You can't make serotonin. You can get anemic because you don't have B12, you don't have iron and folic acid. So it's a whole myriad of things.
Because I think people need to understand, just talking on that point of getting depressed or anxious, that our neurotransmitters, 80%, I think they believe now, are made in our gut. So if our gut is damaged, we can't produce those neurotransmitters. So it becomes a source of depression or anxiety, which is so common these days.
Exactly. It's actually 90%, I've read, that are produced in the intestines, 90% of the neurotransmitters.
There you go.
It's huge.
It's huge. So for all those years, you had all these issues, and you were never asked by the myriad of doctors that you paraded through, whose offices you paraded through, no one ever asked about diet. They never...
No, my diet was never questioned. What I ate for breakfast, it was never asked.
Isn't that interesting? Because isn't that one of the first questions we would ask?
Yes.
For you and your practice and me and my practice. That's one of the top things you want to look at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you is to, I think it's great that you define what celiac disease is, which is the autoimmune disease of the villi, but it's like a continuum, isn't it, of how chronically affected we are by this inflammation. So can we go into a little more of a description of the spectrum of these issues? And also, the thing that confuses people a lot is the difference between an allergy and this gluten sensitivity.
Yes. Well, I'll answer that second one. An allergy is usually an IgE reaction, meaning you're releasing histamines, and it's an immediate response. An allergy would be, say, you're mowing the lawn and there's some pollen released and you release some histamines or some IgE and you sneeze or your eyes run or you get a runny nose, and that's an acute allergy. An autoimmune or delayed intolerance would be you get exposed to something. It goes through your system. It takes maybe a few hours and sometimes a day or two before the body starts reacting. The immune system responds with IgG, a different immunoglobulin, and the immune system starts attacking that substance. Say if you eat a piece of bread, and then the bread goes into the intestines and it gets broken down into gluten and then gliadin, and then gliadin is the smallest molecule of the end byproduct of gluten, which is still too large to be absorbed by most human villi. So in some people, the body just packages it up and ships it out in the form of a bowel movement. And in many people, if they have a leaky gut or if they have sensitive intestines or they have autoimmune reaction to this protein, there's an antibody-antigen reaction where the immunoglobulin IgG will start attacking those protein molecules, whether they be in the intestines or if they leak through the gut and get into the bloodstream and end up in the joints. So to me, an accidental exposure of gluten for me, since I've been clean for 6 years, will create massive joint pain or a headache, or the next day I'll be severely depressed. And it's not an immediate reaction. It's not always I eat the gluten and within 5 minutes I'm feeling horrible. It's usually the next day. So a delayed reaction kind of masks the connection between the offending substance and problem. So somebody might eat pizza one day and the next day have a migraine or have back pain and just think, oh, I slept wrong or I'm stressed. Well, those two things may be true, but if they slept wrong and didn't have gluten, they may not have the severe pain. So I'm a big advocate of, like, don't just blame, the moment you eat something, it's not always going to show up, because an allergy is an immediate reaction, and an intolerance is often autoimmune, which is delayed IgG reaction.
So the more gluten intolerant, the more you have this chronic autoimmune response and inflammation, do you become more sensitive to foods and can create more allergies?
Absolutely, yes, that's another good point. People with gluten intolerance or problems with digesting, the protein in gluten, will also often see lactose intolerance. They go hand in hand. One of the reasons is because the lactase enzyme that's produced to help break down lactose is produced on the villi of the intestines, and when there's damage to the villi from overexposure and assault in the intestines by gluten and the body's immune system breaking down the villi and causing damage, you're going to lose the brush border villi that makes enzymes. So without enzymes, you can't digest other foods, and sometimes then it can cause inflammation, and other organs will start backing up, like the liver or the pancreas, and the liver is needed in digestion, and so the pancreas makes pancreatic enzymes as well as insulin, and the liver stores glucagon. So you'll see people with blood sugar problems, secondary food allergies, difficulty digesting fatty foods, nuts, dairy products. I had about 30 or 40 food allergies and thought I was just allergic to food in general, and that's when I was labeled, oh, it's in your head, this is a mental problem, because, they thought maybe I was anorexic or hypochondriac. But I was afraid to eat because everything hurt my stomach, and it was rare for me to have a day without flour, without wheat or a baked good or, some kind of piece of bread. So now that I'm gluten-free, I can see where, how normal digestion can occur, whereas I never had that experience. And some people it's more subtle, if they didn't have quite the extreme, maybe if their intolerance developed later in life or if they didn't overexpose, because there's three things you need to develop either celiac disease or an autoimmune reaction to gluten. One is exposure or overexposure to wheat. The other is the gene. If you have the HLA, DQ1 and 3 or 2 and 8, those are the two genes that associate with gluten sensitivity. And then the third thing is a stressor. So often that's somebody will get an intestinal infection or even a virus, and that will trigger the immune system to become more sensitive to wheat. Or they'll have a pregnancy. A lot of times women, their first or second pregnancy, they'll feel fine their first pregnancy, and then the second pregnancy, boom, they become celiac or gluten intolerant because the body's under stress, because the pregnancy was stressful, and then they've, got a baby at home and they're nursing, and then they have a second pregnancy, which puts extra, extra demand on the body. And then the other thing is an accident, a car accident. People say they had a car accident, and, it stresses the adrenal glands. It makes cortisol levels higher. People's nervous systems go a little bit haywire, and it can trigger a late, this dormant reaction. So I've seen people develop it in their 30s, and then often you see it in children. So it can happen or anywhere between childhood and, late adulthood.
I also was told, I don't know if you've come across this, that the gluten, that the wheat products, and we should mention it's wheat, rye, barley, oats, and spelt, and cross-reactive with soy, which is interesting. Do you want to have a comment? Do you have a comment about that? The soy, the cross-reactive with soy?
Yes, I've seen people with, gluten, you're right, is in wheat, rye, and barley. Those are the main gluten grains, and spelt. Some people with those sensitivities have cross reactions with corn, or which isn't gluten, or soy. And I'm not sure why that is. There is some theory that because, corn and soy now are almost all genetically modified, it's not live food anymore. It's, from seeds that have been, made in a lab and to grow quicker and be more resistant to, outside invaders like, pesticides and bugs. So you've got genetically modified foods and in crops that are being overproduced without shifting the soil to, the crops and the soil is just depleted of nutrients. So that may be one of the reasons, or, proteins are the antigens. I mean, we make antibodies in our body that react to antigens, and it's always a protein reaction. So foods like gluten, which is a protein, it's the protein molecule in wheat, and dairy, which is, milk, it has sugar in it, and it has protein. and soy is a protein. So when there's a protein that doesn't react properly with the body, it will be attacked by the immune system. So I'm more of a proponent of eating animals and vegetables. And I know there are a lot of vegetarians who then have a problem with the diet, but for me, having like fish and salad or chicken and vegetables or beans and rice and avocado, those are like examples of meals, not sandwiches and pasta and bread, you know, or pancakes and things like that. But yeah, for the soy, have you heard specifically why the soy is reactive? I mean, I can't eat soy either, but I think it's the genetic modification of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember why. It was once explained to me, but to be honest, I can't remember. But I know that it's similar. The body sees it in a similar vein. And the other point I was wanting to mention and ask you about was the wheat and wheat products that we're eating. Because they've been hybridized or whatever has been done to them, they're not the wheat that are either that we had either as children or that our parents or grandparents had, and that the protein component, the gluten component, is 50% more than what the wheat, the traditional wheat, had. So the body doesn't really know it and sees it as a foreign substance and reacts to it. Have you heard that?
Yes, absolutely. Genetic hybriding of the gluten. Gluten makes it stick. It makes bread sticky, makes rolls and baked goods and cakes sticky and rise and become, you know, that, so it looks like that yummy, tasty, you pull it apart and there's nooks and crannies. That makes people, it tastes good, it's easier to you know, process, but it's harder to digest, and it's an assault on the nervous system because we can't break down that much gluten, and changing the, you know, the genetic makeup of a food just because it sells faster, it tastes better, or it's, you know, easier to produce doesn't mean it's better for the body. And then it becomes an addiction. People actually get really addicted to the carbohydrates and the comfort foods, and then it's a vicious cycle where they're too tired to cook, so they eat pizza, and then they wake up feeling yucky, and so they have cereal or toast for breakfast, and it's cheap, it's easy, it tastes good, and they're sick all the time. And that's why there's this epidemic in America of autoimmune disease that you don't see in other countries that aren't bread-based. Like in Japan, they don't have anywhere near the autoimmune disease or the obesity that we have here or the cancers. So, you know, they have more of a fish and rice-based diet and seaweed, and there is really no place you can go in America where they're not going to feed you or offer to feed you, you know, rolls, bagels, and muffins and the like, you know. I mean, bread is just a staple in the American diet, and it's a shame because the food pyramid says, you know, 6 or 8 servings of breads and cereals and, you know, grains a day, and it's kind of like if you eat like a pyramid, you'll look like a pyramid, and you'll probably be, you know, stuck on the ground and lumbering around too tired to exercise. And as a chiropractor, actually, I see a lot of patients with joint pain, a lot of patients who have the inability to exercise, and systemic inflammation, meaning the whole system is inflamed. It's not just the carpenter who comes in with the shoulder pain from hammering, or the tennis player with the tennis elbow, or, you know, the low back patient who slipped and fell, but the people who just ache all over. And when you ache all over, there's inflammation going on in your whole system. And those patients, that first question I ask them is, what do you eat for breakfast? And if it's bagel, then we need to look into sending them for a stool test, or at least if they don't have the money to get tested, we put them on the elimination diet. And, you know, they buy the book, Life After Bread. They follow the diet, and it's pretty clear. And they just invest their money in gluten-free food, which is real whole food, which will be a little more expensive than eating processed wheat and processed, you know, flour. But it's so much worth it, you know, so much more worth it than going through a lifetime of pain and taking medication.
You know, you quote a doctor, Dr. Ralph Golan, in your book, who says perhaps 50% of symptoms seen in doctors' offices are related to food sensitivities. I mean, that's an astounding sentence right there, 50% of symptoms. And then you go and you list common symptoms of gluten intolerance. So if I may, I'm just going to read off what's in your book, Life After Bread, which I really recommend people read. It's not a really big book. You can get it through it easily to understand. It's just laid out really well, so you can just pick it up and get the, you know, gist of it. But here's what what Edie says are the common symptoms of gluten intolerance: skin rashes, eczema, joint pain, low energy, tiredness, chronic fatigue, chronic back pain, headaches, migrating numbness and tingling, stomach bloating, discomfort, diarrhea, constipation, mental instability, depression, anxiety, feeling spaced out, inability to gain weight or to lose weight, developmental delays in children, failure to thrive, brain fog, menstrual problems, and infertility. I mean, that covers a lot of territory there.
Yes, and that's the difficult part with the diagnostic process is in classic celiac disease, you see diarrhea, weight loss, failure to thrive. Those are like the three key things. And in the modern day, what we're finding more is the autoimmune reaction is affecting the endocrine system because any organs, receptor sites can get damaged by inflammation and damaged by the autoimmune attack. So when we have problems in the endocrine system, that affects the thyroid, it affects the adrenal glands, it affects the sex hormones. And so people can develop the menstrual problems or they'll gain weight because the thyroid goes low or they'll become chronically fatigued, which, you know, chronic fatigue can be many things. But why not look at this, you know, a simple food cure before we start testing for, you know, the most obscure things? And especially if you're not questioning a person's diet. If someone said to me, I eat, you know, an egg for breakfast, a salad for lunch, and steamed vegetables with a piece of chicken for dinner, I'm not going to suspect gluten intolerance. But if they start rattling off, you know, bagels and pizza and pasta, and they're chronically fatigued and have alternating bouts of diarrhea and constipation, I'll look into it. So it used to just be seen as a diarrhea problem. Now I'm finding more and more patients have constipation. And the last article I read about just celiac disease was that 40% of celiacs are actually overweight at time of diagnosis. So you can't say that it's a weight loss disease anymore. It can be weight loss, but it also can be weight gain. You know, if the liver gets backed up, the thyroid slows down, the body's fatigued, and the person's always hungry, because they're not satiated, they eat food, they don't absorb it properly, they're still hungry, they're going to overeat. And so comfort food leads to more, you know, eating more comfort food, and it gets, you know, somebody gaining weight. Even if the villi are damaged, it, you know, they'll bloat up in different ways.
You know, you also list in your book the conditions associated with gluten intolerance. And I want to run through the ones you've listed. We probably could add even more because this may get people's attention. So here are some of the conditions: irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, anemia, any autoimmune disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, psychological stress, schizophrenia, attention deficit disorder, lactose intolerance, hypoglycemia, gastric reflux, and thyroid disorders. These are all conditions that are related or potentially related or caused by a gluten sensitivity. That's pretty astounding because we're talking lots of territories here with all sorts of health challenges.
Yes, we are.
And people, like you say, often miss them. You know, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and that's a really Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is a really common autoimmune condition. It's the most common type of hypothyroid-like condition, and that was my big wake-up call, along with the arthritis and aches and joints, aches and pains in my joints. That was my wake-up call to the fact that I was gluten sensitive, and I gave up gluten at that point. And the rest is history. I healed my Hashimoto's, and I don't have any arthritis anymore, and a lot of other health conditions and mood conditions all cleared up. So I'm a living testimony of something that I never related to at all being caused by all these gluten products were directly impacting my health.
That's amazing, Dr. Cheryl. I have had so many patients come back to me with similar stories about, you know, I've had pre-diabetics who are on oral diabetic medication and been told, oh, you're on a slippery slope, you'll be on insulin soon, your, you know, blood sugar is, you know, 170 or some ridiculously high number, and they're taking oral medications. And I asked, well, what did your doctor tell you to eat for breakfast? And they said, oh, you know, I can have toast as long as I don't have fruit. And I say, I disagree. I'd rather you have fruit and have no toast, and we put them on a gluten-free diet. I've had quite a few pre-diabetics come back with blood sugars of 90 or even lower, normal blood sugars, after a week gluten-free. So I've seen people come out of autoimmune thyroiditis. I've seen anemic, you know, teenage girls who think their anemia is just from menstrual bleeding. They go off gluten, their, you know, their blood cell count comes back up. So these are all really important. I mean, not that they're the only cause of these things could be gluten intolerance, but it's certainly worth investigating, and it would warrant either a blood test or a stool test. Osteoporosis later in life is a chronic lack of absorption of nutrients. You don't have enough calcium, the bones will suffer. So an irritable bowel syndrome, to me, anybody with irritable bowel syndrome should be on a gluten-free diet and until they figure out if there's a secondary problem like an infection or, something else causing, the bowel isn't just in a bad mood. It's in a bad mood because you're feeding it something that it can't digest.
So I've come across information that just because this is such a big problem, and I'm talking about the Hashimoto's in people, that gluten directly compromises thyroid function if you're gluten intolerant, one of those organs that is targeted as from the autoimmune response.
Yes, so, this is true.
Yeah, I mean, I tell everybody who has any autoimmune disease, they have to get off of all gluten and probably soy and probably dairy products as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they often travel in tandem. I mean, autoimmune diseases travel in tandem, meaning if you have one, if you have celiac, you'll could develop autoimmune thyroid problems and autoimmune, you know, I've seen people with lupus because of an underlying celiac and Raynaud's syndrome and autoimmune skin problems. But secondary food allergies develop once you're not digesting properly. The body just isn't making the enzymes or the digestive, the bicarbonate enzymes to break down other foods. So it's just a mess. The whole digestion's a mess, and it's hard to know what to blame. But certainly taking all wheat, gluten, and dairy out is a good step.
So I know we're going to be talking about solutions, obviously, and what we can do to start healing the damage that's occurred in our gut, the inflammation that's gone on and how it's affected the lining of the gut. But you have a really interesting chapter talking about our organs, what they do and what goes wrong. So do you want to just kind of go over some of those points with our organs and how they are part of this process and how they get compromised and impaired?
Sure. In the case of the small intestine, which is the classic celiac, that's the most studied and researched and understood organ affected by gluten and celiac disease, the symptom might be bloating or stomach pain or gas or diarrhea or constipation, and that's due to damaged villi and malabsorption of foods. And then that can lead to what they consider irritable bowel syndrome, which is sometimes just a wrong title for celiac and gluten sensitivity. Thyroid problems, like we were just talking about, you can have weight gain, weight loss, chronic fatigue, and then that can lead, you know, be caused by Hashimoto's, high or low thyroid, or thyroiditis. And again, that's an autoimmune attack to the thyroid is very common with people who are sensitive to gluten, whether they're celiac or just gluten sensitive. The pancreas is such an important organ because it makes all our digestive enzymes and our insulin. So to me, the most astounding disease associated with gluten sensitivity is the diabetics. I read an article recently that said 50% of diabetics show an active IgG immunoglobulin reaction to gluten, meaning their body is reacting to gluten. So if half of diabetes is caused by gluten sensitivity, that's an astounding number. So with the pancreas being affected, you can have diabetes, you can have hypoglycemia, low blood sugar is hypoglycemia, indigestion, bloating, heartburn, reflux, and lactose intolerance because that, you know, you're not making any enzymes. I've seen a lot of people with liver congestion, and that can cause back pain and right shoulder pain and nausea, and that can lead to, I've seen studies that show liver cirrhosis and fatty liver and liver diseases are actually can turn around when you put the patient on the gluten-free diet. Many celiacs have I know for myself, I had enlarged and liver and elevated liver enzymes for a while, and I didn't drink alcohol, I didn't take drugs, I didn't have hepatitis, I just had an enlarged liver, and I didn't know why. I thought maybe it was hormonal, but it was my body's reaction to the gluten. And then the sex organs, ovaries in particular, with women, a lot of women with irregular periods, heavy bleeding and cramping, or infertility. Actually, it's a major cause of infertility, amenorrhea or miscarriages. So if you're not absorbing food and you're trying to get pregnant, the body's either going to go out of its way to prevent a pregnancy because it senses there's not enough food to sustain your life, let alone a second one. And in miscarriages, you may not have enough folic acid, or you may not be absorbing enough nutrients, or the eggs aren't being made properly because of the irregularity of the hormone due to, you know, maybe damage to the ovary itself or feedback loops between the pituitary and the thyroid and the ovary, which is all part of the endocrine system. But one of the other things is the nervous system, and celiac disease is considered a multi-system disease. They used to say it was gastrointestinal, but now they're seeing it as multi-system. But the most recent research, they're saying it's actually affects the nervous system. So people with numbness, weakness, tingling, neuropathies, even seizures can be experiencing problems from overexposure to gluten if they're gluten sensitive. I mean, again, there can be, you know, issues with infection, parasite, you know, things that, you know, Lyme's disease, things that come in and do the same thing. But this is something that in a 30-day exclusion diet, your symptoms should improve if there's not a secondary infection or another condition. And so then the other thing is the mental state, which I think is really important for women's issues, because when more women go to therapy and seek out counseling and take antidepressant medication than men, and more antidepressant medication is prescribed in the U.S. than any other drug. And if we don't have, like we talked about, absorption of nutrients in the intestines are blocked because of the gluten, you don't have absorption of neurotransmitters, you don't make serotonin, and that's the brain chemical that all these drugs are trying to help people get, so they feel happy and balanced. If you don't have this neurotransmitter, you're going to be depressed. If your body is constantly under stress and your nervous system is under stress, you'll have anxiety and mood swings, blood sugar drops. For me, the blood sugar drops created massive mood swings. And in little kids, it's temper tantrums or ADD or and sometimes even bipolar disease and schizophrenia can be linked to someone who's massively gluten sensitive. So these are all things to look at. I mean, I'd say read the book, research it online. Most medical doctors are not looking at this. They're looking at cause and effect, you know, a drug that can fix a problem. This is a food problem, so it's not researched as much. And it's, you know, and because all the different organs can be affected, there's so many other diagnostic possibilities. But I'm just saying, as a chiropractor, it's amazing to me that I'd say probably 50% of my patients are off gluten, and they came to me with anything from digestive problems to muscle and joint pain to headaches, fatigue, you know, or depression. I've seen plenty of people who just came in for mental problems, you know, emotional anxiety and depression, and in a month off gluten, they couldn't believe how much clearer their brain was. So those are the associated conditions and what can be affected by gluten.
I mean, that's so overwhelming. You know, if we could only have like a gluten-free month in this country, think how
mandatory
many,
everybody.
how people could, you know, respond. So many conditions would disappear. It's just staggering to think of something. It's like a blinding flash of the obvious, you know, something that we use every day, and it's so insidious that we don't put the connection in place that having that bread or that muffin or, you know, going to our local bakery and having our favorite goodie could, in fact, be driving our illnesses, our mental, emotional states, our pain, our, you know, menstrual problems, our hot flashes. We just don't really make that connection up until now. It's just such an important topic because it could be saving people so much suffering, not to mention so much money if we, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, just remove the gluten. And we live in a world that now has so many gluten-free options. Unlike what might have been more difficult a decade ago, now we don't have to feel deprived at all.
It's the best time to go gluten-free. There's never been a better time. The information is out. More and more books are coming out, and the options, gluten-free aisles on the grocery store lines in Whole Foods and in larger health food stores, even in regular grocery stores, they do offer gluten-free pasta and pizza. But the sad thing is they still have aisles and aisles and aisles of junk that, you know, really, I only shop at the periphery of the health food store. You go down the vegetable aisle and get your vegetables and fruits, and then you go down the meat and fish aisle and get your protein, get eggs, and then maybe find a gluten-free aisle and get your gluten-free pasta, bread, pizza crust, and cereals, and then get out. Because if you go up and down the aisles, it's just junk food. It's almost all gluten. And, if there could be a paradigm shift and people had more gluten-free options, they would notice, an overall change, you know, in people's well-being, and we'd have less sick care and more health care. I know that my disease became my teacher. Growing up sick, looking well, people thought I was a real popular and healthy-looking child, but I always felt sick. And it wasn't until I found out what it was and made the shift that I realized that I had been poisoning myself and didn't know it. And there's something to be said for that. You sort of have to, you know, your disease becomes your teacher. You suffer enough and you want to spread the word to help other people, because otherwise it was just too depressing to think I spent 20 years suffering for no reason. So the book and being an advocate and going on these talks and now treating patients, you know, with a whole different, instead of just diagnosing chiropractic issues, I look at people's diet first. Because that to me, if they're not fueling their body properly, I can't fix them. And so it's personal responsibility as a big, you know, it comes down to.
So this is probably a good time to give your website if people want to get more information about your work or how to pick up the book or find out more about what you're doing. What's the best place for them to go?
The website is www.lifeafterbread.com, all small letters, and that's the name of the book, Life After Bread. So if you go to lifeafterbread.com, that's my website. You can purchase the book there. It's also available on Amazon. Most local bookstores either have it or can order it. I have links on my website to other, other people's work. I really loved... Dr. Peter Green wrote a book called Celiac Disease, The Hidden Epidemic, and that's kind of like a medical textbook, but it just will outline everything about celiac disease. And then there's another book about gluten sensitivity. Dr. Rodney Ford, who's out of New Zealand, wrote a book called The Shocking Truth About Gluten, The Brain-Grain Connection, and he talks about children's brains and how they're affected by grain, because he runs a pediatric clinic where he deals with gastroenterology, and he's finding a large portion of children with attention deficit and mood disorders and, failure to thrive, all the things we already discussed, and then stomach problems, the obvious, have this gluten sensitivity. And he comes up with a lot of the quotes that he thinks that one in three people should are gluten sensitive. There are other places that show the antibodies showing one out of three people show an antibody against gluten. So these are just other books I recommend on my website. So, give you some information.
So the next question I think where we need to go from here is, okay, what do we do about this? How do we heal the damage that has been done to the lining of our gut and the inflammation that ensues from having that reaction, sensitivity? What's your favorite protocol to help people heal? Once they stop introducing gluten into their diet, where do you go from there?
Well, I do a lot of kinesiology, which is muscle testing to diagnose and check for acupuncture point weakness. And if they have problems, say the intestines are still pretty weak, we can put them on probiotic. Sometimes we'll do L-glutamine, which is an amino acid to support the intestines. If we suspect that there's some kind of infection still going on, there can be things like olive leaf extract or oregano oil to help kind of clean out anything else going on. Those are kind of heavy, they will still cause a little irritation, but will get rid of any of the residual you know, maybe bugs or bacteria or virus still living in the intestines, because when we're immune compromised like that, opportunistic infections can settle in. Often I'll check people for liver issues, and if their liver seems congested and they're very inflamed, we'll do a liver cleanse. Some of the products I use are called Ultra Clear, but there are some liver cleanses you can get, you know, from the health food store. Metagenics has a good product called Ultra Clear, which is a great, it's a medical food that'll give you nutrients. So it's really important. It depends on where the person's at. If they're very thin and they've lost weight and they're depleted, we want to feed them. We want to put them on, you know, a lot of vegetables, good solid proteins, and probably a multivitamin, multi-mineral kind of thing. If they're inflamed and bloated and kind of, you know, a little bit overweight, then we're going to do probably more cleansing, you know, give them Ultra Clear, maybe do less food, more salads, and, you know, rice and beans and things like that to kind of clean them out. And probiotics are always a really good idea, but you have to make sure that the bowel is moving, especially when you need to do a liver cleanse. If you do a liver cleanse, you have to make sure you're not constipated, because if you start dumping stuff out of the liver, you don't want to reabsorb it. You want to get it out. So making sure that they're having at least one, if not two, ideally two bowel movements a day. And if they have to increase something that will move the bowel, if they're not already having diarrhea, you give them something to move the bowel. If they have loose stools, you certainly don't want to put them on, you know, aloe vera juice or Cascara Sagrada or anything that'll clean them out. You want to slow them down, so they'll be eating more rice and bananas and things that slow down the bowel. And probably check them for parasites or infection and make sure that there's not a secondary problem going on. But I'm a big proponent of taking a good calcium magnesium, because those are nutrients that won't be absorbed properly with celiac disease, and trace minerals, a lot of trace minerals like manganese. It's good to have someone who's working with you, because it's a little daunting to know exactly what the right nutrient would be. But, you know, whole foods diet is paramount, you know, foods that come from the earth, you know, vegetables that grow, or beans and rice, or animals. And avoiding processed meats like cold cuts. I would prefer somebody buy a chicken and bake it, or, you know, buy pieces of cooked chicken, or, you know, those kind of things, rather than cold cuts or processed meats. And the same thing with fresh vegetables instead of frozen or canned. And then anything breaded or fried is going to have wheat in it, and you have to watch out for the hidden sources, like soy sauce is both soy and wheat mixed together. And that's going to be liquid gluten, go straight to the gut and inflame you, as well as beer. Beer is probably the worst thing you can do. That's another question I like to ask, and this goes more with men, but, you know, women do drink beer as well. I often will say, how do you feel when you drink beer? And a lot of women will tell me, oh, I don't drink beer, I can't. And a lot of men say, well, you know, it kind of bloats me and gives me, you know, gas or diarrhea. To me, that's a red flag that they're sensitive. It's kind of like doing a gluten challenge test. You're dumping liquid gluten right into the body, and within 30 minutes, that's going to be more of an immediate reaction than eating food. So if you're bloating or getting, you know, pretty quick digestive problems from beer, that's a liquid wheat barley mixture. That would be a food you can't have, and that'd be a test, you know, a question to ask somebody to see how they do with liquid gluten.
You know, people don't think about that beer actually is a source of gluten.
Oh, absolutely.
What about testing? What's your favorite way of testing? If people wanted to test, although I sometimes think it's not the highest priority in ways of spending your money, you can pretty much assume, if you're relating to any of these symptoms, that going off of gluten would benefit you. But
I agree.
People did want to get tested. Where would they go?
Yeah, I agree. The elimination diet is such a quick way to start the healing process. But if you want to make sure, because this is such a strict diet and you have to follow it 100%, there's no cheating, I recommend the stool test. And the stool test can be done at home. You just go online to enterolab.com. That's www.enterolab.com. And that's in my book, Chapter 7 of the book. I'll say this is how, you know, where you order the test kit. I'm not affiliated with the lab. It's a doctor who's a gastroenterologist. He's been doing it 25 or 30 years. and he's been diagnosing gluten sensitivities and intolerances and celiac disease through the stool testing. They send you a kit when you go online. You order it. You pay for it. I think it's about $350, so it's a chunk of money. But you only have to do it one time. You don't need to repeat it. And it tests for six different things. It's very comprehensive. You get an IgG test for gluten sensitivity. You get an IgG test for lactose sensitivity, so you can tell you if you're gluten intolerant or lactose intolerant. It also checks for an autoimmune reaction, which is called a tissue transglutaminase, which is an enzyme that will be elevated in the presence of tissue breakdown. So if you're having organs and tissues being broken down, this enzyme will be elevated. So that'll say, yes, you have an autoimmune disease, you have an antibody reaction to gluten and to dairy. It shows which gene you have, if you possess the HLA-DQ2 and 8 or the HLA-DQ1 and 3. Those are both genetic markers. We'll tell you, yes, this is a marker for celiac disease or gluten sensitivity. And it also checks for malabsorption of food. So if you have fecal fat loss in your intestines, meaning malabsorbed food, they will say, yeah, your villi's damage, we've got elevated fats in the stool. So I had a really high fecal fat loss, and that was because I was losing weight. Some people won't have a fecal fat loss, but they'll still have really high autoimmune reaction. The TTG will be elevated, and that tells them maybe, like in your case, the thyroid's being attacked, but that's not causing dumping of fat into the stool or weight loss. So it tests for six different things. You do the stool test at home and you mail it in, and they will send you a result in the mail or by email within 2 weeks. And the nice thing about that is if it's positive, if you've got, and they have an 800 number you can call to discuss with the nurse there, you can do it all at home and you don't have to pay for a doctor's visit. It's all just a stool test. So if you read the book, $15 on the book, and then you buy the stool test, you've got your new lifelong diet and guidelines for it. Because for me, when they thought I had celiac disease, I didn't believe it. I didn't want to go off gluten. I didn't do it until I got the test pack. And when I saw that all my labs were elevated, I knew I had the results in my hand that I had what I had to do. But just talking about celiac disease, it just seemed like, wow, that's a huge diet change. But it was everything I needed to do for myself and didn't know. So that kind of, it propelled me into making this big shift and being this strict and knowing that it was so worth it. And you couldn't pay me to eat a piece of pizza. There's nothing that would be worth the pain. And I mean, you really couldn't unless it was a gluten-free piece of pizza. There's no way I'm even going to walk into a pizza place.
It doesn't take much gluten to set off that reaction in the body. I remember someone saying that just if you have that sensitivity, just an eighth of a teaspoon.
Absolutely. I've read 3 grams, which is, probably about an eighth of a teaspoon. It's a few molecules. So if you accidentally have soy sauce in your chicken fried rice when you go to the Chinese restaurant, you think, oh, it's chicken and rice and vegetables. Well, there's, a quarter of a cup of soy sauce in it. You're getting gluten. I've had things that have had a little bit of beer in the batter and forget it. It just sets me off. So I'm very strict. I have a food allergy card that I give out. It looks like a business card I give at restaurants, and it says, I am severely allergic to gluten, and these are the foods that are, it has. And they take it seriously, because rather than sitting there and explaining a list of symptoms, it can be very, tiring for both you and the weight person. So you give them a card, they show the kitchen says, oh, well, we can make you the salmon and the vegetable and the potato, and we won't put the sauce on it. Great. And, it might be a little bit bland, or they can make a different sauce, if they take the time. It's the fast food you really have to be careful of, because almost everything they put wheat in or soy sauce in.
Yeah, that's it takes diligence. Do you think you ever overcome that reaction to gluten?
It's an interesting thought. I know that Stanford University right now is working on a peptide inhibitor that they want to give to people so they don't react to gluten as much. I think that, it would be nice so people aren't so, so scared and so reactionary to the foods. But I'm afraid that what they're trying to do is go ahead and eat pasta and here, just take this drug or this, peptide inhibitor. I think as you heal, for me, I know as I healed through, the years of being gluten-free, now I can eat dairy. I mean, I eat it in small amounts, and I have goat dairy more than cow. And I like to eat raw dairy if I can find it, and yogurts and things like that. but I'm back on nuts, I'm back on fruits, things that I would react to, I don't react to anymore. But the wheat and the gluten still give me the problem, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to, you know, if you can overcome. In the medical world, they say celiac disease is a lifelong disease. You don't ever outgrow it or cure it, but you can be on a gluten-free diet and be completely asymptomatic and live a healthy life. And exposures may or may not take you down. I've had exposures that have been terrible, and I've had exposures where I thought, that wasn't so bad.
But, well, Edie, we've come to the end of a fascinating conversation. I am so grateful for the wonderful work you are doing and helping to enlighten people on this really important subject. And I encourage everyone listening, really consider giving up your gluten. I think it can really save your life. And Edie, thank you so much. And remember, everyone, visit lifeafterbread.com and you'll learn more about the work of Dr. Edie Bauer. Thank you, Edie.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Bye-bye. Well, this is the end of another What Women Must Know enlightening program. Thank you for joining us. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.